Do a little politicking?
I'll test your place, you impudent son bitch. You don't tell your pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yes. That's a powerful new force.
Bring it in, Junior.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9 on this Monday morning after Thanksgiving. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving and had a great break. But now we're looking towards the next holiday. Less than a month away now from Christmas. And someone who got an early Christmas present is none other than our favorite of all presidential sons, Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden, on Sunday night, received a pardon from his dad over his recent felony convictions on tax and gun charges. Quite a big revelation. Also kind of funny, he did it on a Sunday night. Why they did it on a Sunday night, I don't know. But maybe just kind of sneak it in there, I guess. Like they don't know there's a 24-hour news cycle. But just did it on a Sunday night before his dad heads to Africa. And Biden wrote in a statement, said, quote, "Today I signed a pardon for my son Hunter. From the day I took office, I said I would not interfere with the Justice Department's decision-making. And I kept my word, even as I have watched my son being selectively and unfairly prosecuted." And all I got to say is, what are you talking about? Because you control the Justice Department. You put in Merrick Garland. That was a big thing with him, right? Is that, and then Merrick Garland did all those prosecutions against Trump for you. So what do you mean he was unfairly prosecuted? I mean, this was always his plan, to look like they were trying to uphold the system of law during the campaign, and then once the campaign was over, to pardon him. Never had intention to actually go through with this conviction. They put up this little thing to look like to give the indication that they believe in the source of law, unlike Donald Trump. They kept saying that over and over during the campaign, when it came time to, once they lost, then I don't know if even they would have won, this probably would have happened. Again, it was all for political purposes that they had Merrick Garland do this to try to give the indication that they're for the rule of law and then reverse, do a switcheroo on the American people afterwards. The president's statement continued, quote, "Without aggravating factors like use in a crime, multiple purchases, or buying a weapon as a straw purchaser, people are almost never brought to trial on felony charges solely for how they filled out a gun form." And that's just not true, because I have done it as a prosecutor, as I have brought federal charges against people for filling out that exact same gun form wrong, or being a felon and filling it out wrong is typically what I did. Specifically lying on that form. I have done it. Like, I have literally prosecuted that exact crime. So that is just totally not true. In fact, a lot of people are prosecuted for that. Now, isn't it the Democrats that are always saying our gun laws aren't enforced and we need more gun laws? And that's exactly what that's there for, is to prosecute people who filled out wrong and the guns end up going to people it shouldn't be going to. I mean, don't the Democrats always talk about that, right? They always talk about the rule of law and they want more gun regulations. And they're literally pardoning someone for violating a gun regulation. He also said, those who were late, he said, also people aren't prosecuted. Those who were late paying their taxes because of serious addictions, but paid them back subsequently with interest and penalties, are typically given non-criminal resolutions. It is clear that Hunter was treated differently. He's definitely was treated differently. I give you that, because everybody else who's been prosecuted for those, they're still sitting in jail tonight. If their sentence is still there, whereas Hunter got off scot-free. So you're right there. He is definitely treated differently being the president's son, and how great and how much of a privilege that is to have your dad as president who can pardon you no matter what. Now, the president had previously said he would not pardon his son or commute his sentence after convictions in the two cases in Delaware and California. The move on Sunday night comes weeks before Hunter Biden was set to receive his punishment after his trial conviction in the gun case and guilty plea on tax charges, and less than 2 months before President-elect Donald Trump is set to return to the White House. It caps a long-running legal saga for the younger Biden, who publicly disclosed he was under federal investigation in December 2020, a month after his father's 2020 victory. How convenient again. And of course, this will definitely cast a shadow on Biden's legacy. And I don't know what, you know, we talk about Biden's legacy. And I think this is also a good indication from President Biden that he knows there's no legacy, maybe, right? I mean, what legacy is there? Because we look at what's happened over the last 4 years and how people have suffered, how housing prices have skyrocketed, how food prices have skyrocketed, how we've been involved in multiple wars throughout the world. So, you know, people say this could cast a shadow on his legacy. Well, I think you have to have a legacy to begin with to be able to cast a shadow on, right? Because, I mean, his legacy already is so, you know, so poor. I mean, Kamala Harris was not a great candidate, don't get me wrong. She was a horrible candidate. She had no personality. People couldn't trust her. She looked like a shyster. She acted like a shyster. None of what they did was ever authentic. But even if it wasn't her, just looking at the fact that she was running on the basis and the record of this administration, it was going to be a landslide, I think, regardless, Kamala Harris or no Kamala Harris. And like I said, she definitely didn't help things, right? Don't get me wrong. She didn't have any part to play. But you'd have to have an extremely, extremely strong candidate to be able to pull through on the horrible legacy and the poor legacy and the poor record that this administration has. So the idea that something like this could cast a shadow or could hurt his legacy, I don't know. Just because it's already poor, right? I mean, it's, and I think this is also an indication that they are aware of that as well. That they know that he has no legacy. And if you have no legacy, what does it matter what you do at near the end here, right? It doesn't matter whatsoever. Again, he's doing this just weeks before he's supposed to have his sentencing. And Biden, who time and again pledged to Americans that he would restore norms and respect for the rule of law after Trump's first term in office, ultimately used his position to help his son, breaking his public pledge to Americans that he would do no such thing. In a statement released Sunday evening, Biden said, quote, "I believe in the justice system, but as I have wrestled with this, I also believe raw politics has infected this process and it led to a miscarriage of justice." And this is just hilarious. It's just funny to hear this, you know, for him to say, I believe I have wrestled this. I believe raw politics has infected this process. Yeah, you have. I mean, and politics infected the process from you. Right. This is all because this is your administration. Right. You're the ones who politicized prosecutions. Right. And this was, you know, Hunter Biden was supposed to be, again, the political saying, hey, we're not doing this. Right. We're not giving special favors. But they end up giving special favors. Right. So it's just absolutely ridiculous that they could do this. I mean, he could pardon Trump technically, too. Right. I mean, there's nothing really for Trump to be pardoned by, but they already have. They say they're going to hold off on these prosecutions. Well, just go ahead and pardon. Say, hey, we're going to move a stone here. I believe that all these things were political in nature, and therefore, we're just going to move a new stone. I'm going to pardon my son. I'm going to pardon Trump. We're just going to do all these. But just his son gets pardoned. And here's also a crazy thing, because The president's sweeping pardon covers not only the gun and tax offenses in which Hunter was found guilty, but also any, quote, offenses against the United States which he has committed or may have committed or taken part on during the period of January 1st, 2014 through December 1st, 2024, 10-year period. So that makes you wonder, what's going on in that 10-year period, right? Obviously, you have these charges, but what else? Because it goes all the way up to December 1st, 2024, all the way up until the day he's done it. What has he been doing for the last couple weeks, man? Like, what has Hunter been up to the last few weeks? Why did the pardon have to extend all the way to the day of December 1st, right, to yesterday? Did he have, like, a rager again this past week? Was he just doing blow off hookers again? Because that's what he loves doing, right? That's his thing. So maybe he was doing that again this past weekend or something. After Kamala left, he made like, man, I really got to get through this. I got to do some blow off some hookers, man. I got to do it. Right? Is that what he was doing? Because why did the pardon have to go up for there? And then again, you know, from January 1st, 2014, that's also interesting because you remember the Hunter Biden laptop stuff, all the illegal dealings with Ukraine, maybe current dealings with Ukraine. That's another thing that's worrisome, right? Not just a blow off of hookers, but also this idea that all this money, if you just remember last week or two weeks ago, where Biden excused all the loans against against Ukraine, so Ukraine doesn't have to pay back any of the money that we lent them. Was Hunter involved in that? Was Hunter had some backroom deals that funnels to the president? That's a questionable thing. So what other dealings are we talking about here? Because again, that's going to cover all of the Hunter laptop stuff. It's going to cover any of the dealings that he would have had in that regard, and you know, with Ukraine, all those backroom stuff that Trump said he wanted to investigate, which they tried to impeach Trump over, right? If you can remember that was one of the reasons they wanted to impeach him, because Trump was calling over to Ukraine, saying, "Hey, what's going on? Like, tell me what's going on with the Bidens, right?" And all of a sudden, the Democrats got all up in arms and they wanted to impeach him over that. But it was like, wait a minute, now there's something going on there, and now the president has a 10-year pardon. That's going to cover all of that conduct as well. So when Trump, I think that's another thing they're worried about, right? And we're going to talk about the new FBI director and stuff like that this show. But they know that Trump is changing the justice system, and maybe it's not just this stuff he was found guilty of. It's other investigations that Trump's going to have, right? It's other investigations that could have found more about the Hunter laptop. And this doesn't stop those investigations. I hope they know that, because just because he's pardoned Hunter for those things, for crimes we don't even know about, right? He's pardoned him for crimes we have no idea what he's committed, which is also kind of interesting. I mean, he may have killed a hooker out in D.C. for all we know, right? But all the dealings with Ukraine, all that stuff, it also leads to the fact of, you know, what was going on and what connections did he have beside him? Because just because Hunter can't do it doesn't mean, you know, other people that were involved. I would say Joe Biden, but we already know based on the her interview that according to her's report that Joe Biden is not mentally competent to stand trial. So it's not going to happen with him. But other people that could be connected to this, I hope they know it's not going to stop that. And that's not going to stop Trump from continuing to investigate it. At least I hope it doesn't. And knowing Trump and, they're going to, and Pam Bondi, they're still going to look into these things, even though he had this wide ranging pardon that covers a span of 10 years. Okay. We're going to take our first break right here. When we get back, we're going to continue on the Hunter Biden pardon story, including some clips of Joe Biden, and his fearless warrior, his fearless, press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre and her own statements as well, over this whole pardon issue, and what was said previously about it. So we're going to play for you some of those clips, because, you know, you probably know what they say, but it's just so crazy to me, to hear it. So, like I said, we'll cover that after the break, but keep it tuned here to the full story. If you want to call in during the break, number 601-879-0002. Keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9 as we continue to talk about the pardon of Hunter Biden. And I want to talk, I want to play for you a few things in regards to just the complete 180 degree reversal of this pardon idea. So in June, Biden categorically ruled out a pardon to or commutation to his son, telling reporters as his son faced trial in the Delaware gun case, quote, I abide by the jury decision. I will do that. I will not pardon him. And then he had a sit down on June 6th with David Muir. You remember David Muir, right? In that horrible debate, he was trying to do fact-checking Trump all the time against Kamala Harris. And again, trying to play into this, we want to show that Biden is going to uphold the rule of law. And so he's wanting to get Biden to do that. And I'll play for this for you, and you can also see how old, you know, how bad Biden sound back then. This is not too long before he dropped out. But here it is in his David Muir interview on June 6th with ABC News.
Will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Right there. Doesn't get any more direct than that. And as recently as November 8th, days after Trump's victory, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre ruled out a clemency for the younger Biden, saying, "We've been asked that question multiple times. Our answer stands, which is no." And talking about Karine Jean-Pierre, she has looked like a complete idiot after this, because she has denied a pardon six times. So here's her on November 7th, right here. Let me play that for you.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre had this to say.
"We've been asked that question multiple times. Our answer stands, which is no."
Hunter.
There's that. And then here's her again. Here's her again when asked about it, and she's always wears these bright colors. So it's like all different colors of popsicles that she looks like she wears these dresses. But that was one color. Here's a yellow dress. Same thing going on with her.
Okay, let me go back to the first question of the briefing. I know you said not a lot's changed since yesterday, and that it's a personal matter. But from a presidential perspective, is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No. No. I just answered. Go ahead.
So, right there again, a total of six times that this has happened, and so it's just like I said. It's just complete. There's no way they can spin this. And again, I don't think they care, right, anymore. Hunter said of the incident, said, "I have admitted and taken responsibility for my mistakes during the darkest days of my addiction. Mistakes that have been exploited to publicly humiliate and shame me and my family for political sport." What? No, you did these things. These were things that you did. We covered that trial in detail here on the show. You can go back. You can go to our website, regulatedproductions.com. Look at some of those episodes from back then and find them. We went into detail of everything that went. And these were things that he did, right? Things that he said. I mean, things that he wrote about, right? This is not just like, oh, they're making these things sound bad. No, he wrote a book, ladies and gentlemen. He wrote a whole memoir discussing all of these things, right? Admitting them. And maybe that's why you can write a memoir admitting crimes when you know your dad's the president and you know you're going to get pardoned. This is all I said. This is always the plan from the get-go. President Biden, you know, there's also the fact that it's his son. And so I can understand wanting to pardon your son. Don't get me wrong. But what makes it so much worse, though, is the fact that you'd say you wouldn't do it over and over and over and over again to multiple people. Your press secretary said it over and over, yet you still did it. Again, that just shows to me that they care nothing about his legacy. They care nothing about his trust in the American people. And that just shows the American people that they made the right decision this past November. But Trump had some more things to say about it, and including maybe even hinting at a mass pardon for January 6th defendants after this has come through. So Trump has pledged to dramatically overhaul the Justice Department after he was prosecuted I would say politically, for the stuff that happened during the 2020 presidential election. And he said in a social media post on Sunday that Hunter Biden's pardon was, quote, such an abuse and miscarriage of justice. Trump asked, does the pardon given by Joe to Hunter include the J6 hostages who have now been in prison for years? Which is interesting, right? I think that's a pretty good indication that he is going to pardon everybody, all of those people that did it. There's 1,500 defendants, and he has floated pardon during his campaign trail for those defendants, either still facing trials or those already convicted for breaching the Capitol as Congress was voting to certify Biden's 2020 election over Trump. And I think that'd be a good thing for his for those people. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that was wrong with those prosecutions as well. They essentially tried to twist laws. I mean, the Supreme Court even said, hey, the Justice Department was trying to twist laws when they said they couldn't do it anymore in the recent Supreme Court decision this past summer. And so, you know, outside of people who did any kind of physical violence, right, if they harmed any of the, any people who harmed the guards, the Capitol guards or defaced property, you know, those kind of charges, I think I wouldn't pardon. But all those other political based ones, like trying to prevent an official proceeding, all this other craziness that they did, they try to slap on. Absolutely. Right. I think those should be pardoned, because, again, I mean, I think a lot of those things would be overturned anyway on appeal, as some already have. Right. And again, the Supreme Court decided that this past summer. So, you know, as an outside of really ones where people, they have physically harmed someone or defaced government property, then the rest of them should be pardoned. Now, again, those people, I think we also got to look at to how those people got in. And I think there's some still unanswered questions about that. There's never really investigations. There's investigations into who was there and all those people and prosecuting them. But there really wasn't any investigation into how they came in so easy, how they got in so easy. None of that really happened. So, you know, because I think it was just way too easy for them just to walk in there like it was nothing, like it was nothing. So I think whoever's responsible for that should be looked at, because, as we know, that may go all the way up to someone like Nancy Pelosi, who may have had something to do with that, or at least indications thereof. But like I said, this whole idea of pardoning Joe Biden. I mean, Hunter Biden, I think everybody knew this was probably going to happen. I mean, did people really think he wasn't going to do it? And this is why there needs to be a return of common sense, as I said, to the Justice Department, because the Justice Department has become a political arm. It has become the Gestapo of the Democratic Party. That is how they have used it. And it is time to return the Justice Department to prosecuting crimes, right? Not going after political opponents, not making mockery of our justice system, which to me is the most offensive thing, because that's what they've done. Our justice system, for good or for, whether you like it or not, it is by far the best justice system in the world. I have no doubt about that. And that's from someone who's both prosecuted and defended people. We have the most fair justice system in the world. It's not perfect. It's not fair for everyone. Don't get me wrong. But you compare it to other forms of justice throughout the world, even other third world countries, our first world countries, you know, in Europe, ours is the most fair. It is the most, our court systems are the most fair to defendants. Our Constitution is so protective towards to the accused, which is something that other countries just don't, including European countries, just don't have, right? You know, the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments of the Constitution, those kind of protections, they're just amazing. And it makes it that our justice system that fair. You know, the fact that we have this jury system and all these things. And again, it's not perfect. No system is, because it involves humans. But most of the time, of course, there's a lot of times, you know, the justice system gets it wrong. But most of the time it gets it right, you know. I would say the majority of the time it gets it right. And I, you know, as someone who has been a prosecutor and current defense attorney, I have to believe in the system. And that to me is what has been most offensive about this Justice Department is that they have taken away from that system, from that trust in the system that we have to have. We have to have trust in our judicial system. And our founding fathers put in so many protections to make it hard, and they did it for good reason, and we see why, right? And for them to tear that down, to tear down that institution, the Department of Justice is once a very highly respected institution, and it should be a highly respected institution. It is there to protect the American people. It is there to protect the millions of Americans that throughout this country, to protect them from the criminals who would harm them or harm this country or harm our system of government, right? That's what it's there for. And it is such a supposed to be, right, this higher calling that people that go to work there. And it has been completely overturned on its head and taken away from. And people have lost their trust in the Justice Department after they've gone after, parents and schools and all these other crazy, and then going after a former president of the United States for political purposes. It has lost all sense of that once high regard that it should hold, right? And protect, and it's really, that's another job. It's there. It's not only to protect us against criminals, but it's also there to protect the legal system itself, right? I mean, of course, we have judges, but it's their job as the Justice Department to make sure that the proper people are prosecuted, that innocent people aren't prosecuted, and that what they are doing is the betterment of the people of the United States. As I used to tell, as I trained prosecutors, when you represent, when you go to court, right, as a prosecutor, you know, you go in as it's a federal court or a military court. It is always United States versus the person, right? United States versus Smith. Right. And as a prosecutor, that means you represent the United States. Right. How awesome of a responsibility is that you get to do that? You get to represent the people of the United States. You don't represent anybody else. Right. You represent that interest. That is your interest as a prosecutor, is the people. Right. And that is what we should aim for justice as prosecutors. And somehow that was lost. That got lost somewhere along the way where all of a sudden they weren't representing the people of the United States. They were representing the Democratic Party or representing Joe Biden or representing some other politician. And they lost that type of respect and that honesty that is so important. And, you know, Pam Bondi, I have high hopes for her to return that. She has a great reputation and a great, some great experience. I'm so excited to have Pam Bondi as the Attorney General. And we're going to take a break right here. Next, we're going to talk about another important person as part of that is the FBI Director and Trump's FBI pick for that. So keep it tuned here. We're going to go into detail about him as much time as we have. We're running out, but I want to go into some facts about him as well as part of returning the Justice Department to a respected institution. So keep it tuned here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. So obviously we've been talking a lot about the Justice Department here. Started out with the pardon of Hunter Biden and the miscarriage of justice that is. We've talked about the January 6th people with Donald Trump. And I want to next talk about a big part of this evolution of the Justice Department that Donald Trump is looking to do with his pick for the FBI director. So President-elect Trump tapped longtime ally and crusader against the deep state, Cash App Cash, known as Cash, he goes by Cash Patel, to lead the FBI. Well, he will work to snuff out America's crime epidemic, bust up migrant gangs, and stymie drug and human trafficking, according to the upcoming president declared in his statement. He posted to his Truth Social on Sunday evening. I think he posted this before the bombshell of the Hunter pardon. He said, Cash did an incredible job during my first term, where he served as chief of staff at the Department of Defense, deputy director of national intelligence, and senior director for counterterrorism at the National Security Council. Cash has also tried over 60 jury trials, which I think is an important part, an important thing for the director of the FBI to have, someone who knows what these trials looks like. He said, this FBI will end the growing crime epidemic in America, dismantle the migrant criminal gangs, and stop the evil scourge of human and drug trafficking across the border. Cash will work under our great Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to bring back fidelity, bravery, and integrity to the FBI. Fidelity, bravery, integrity is the motto of the FBI. It follows with the FBI theme. Following Trump's massive win over Vice President Kamala Harris at the ballot boxes last month, speculation mounted that Patel was a top contender to serve as the FBI chief, an agency which Trump has repeatedly slammed as weaponized against Republicans. Patel, who is 44, is a New York native, so he's a decently young guy at 44, is a New York native who grew up on Long Island in Garden City and was raised by Indian immigrant parents. He earned his law degree in 2005 from Pace University before serving as a public defender in Florida's Miami-Dade area, where he tried scores of complex cases ranging from murder to narco trafficking to complex financial crimes and jury trials in state and federal courts, according to his Defense Department biography. So this guy is an interesting thing, but he's sort of like Trump. He's a New York guy, but also got a lot of Florida connections. And again, you see that a lot in Trump's picks, New York people and Florida people, which is, of course, Donald Trump. He's a New York guy with who's then moved to Florida. So you see that connection there as well. Patel hit the national radar during Trump's first administration, including when he worked as the national security advisor and senior counsel for the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence under the leadership of then committee chair Representative Devin Nunes, who's a Republican from California. Trump continued in his announcement of Patel as FBI chief, saying, quote, Cash is a brilliant lawyer, investigator, and America First fighter who has spent his career exposing corruption, defending justice, and protecting the American people. He played a pivotal role in uncovering the Russia hoax, standing as an advocate for truth, accountability, and the Constitution. Patel's name spread across news reports during his career as he became known as the man behind the Nunes memo, which was a four-page document released in 2018 that revealed improper use of surveillance by the FBI and the Justice Department in Russia investigation into Trump, which I think is important. This guy has been looking into the FBI. He wants to keep the FBI. He's tried to keep the FBI honest before, and we need people to try to keep our investigative agencies honest. So that's a great person for to lead it, someone who has tried to keep them honest before. Patel told Fox News Digital of the memo last year. He said, if they had gotten it right in the first place, when Devin and I and so many others were actually putting out the truth, instead of serving as a disinformation machine for the left-wing agenda, there would be no reassessment. They could not have done their work in the deep state without their partners in the mainstream media who are part of that deep state. Patel's role in the investigation and memo elevated his career status in the Trump orbit, and he was named Senior Director for Counterterrorism at the National Security Council in 2019, under the first Trump administration. In that role, he assisted the White House in eliminating foreign terrorist leadership, such as ISIS chief Abu Bakr al-Baghdad in 2019, and al-Qaeda militant Qasem al-Rahimi in 2020. In November 2020, as Trump squared off against Joe Biden at the ballot boxes, the 45th and soon-to-be 47th president named Patel chief of staff to acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller. The administration shakeup followed Trump's firing Secretary of Defense Mark Esper after the cabinet member said he did not support invoking the Insurrection Act in order to send the U.S. military to quell violent protests that rocked cities nationwide in 2020 after the whole, you know, George Floyd things. And he wanted to use the military to suppress those riots, which would have been a great idea. Trump has really great ideas on how to use the military. This is a little bit of an aside. But using the military in ways that serve American people here is something that that presidents haven't thought of in a long time. And I am such a proponent of that because we have all these guys who are just sitting around these posts, right? Let's utilize them, right? So again, he utilized them to build the border, utilizing them and to quell riots and things like that. I think, you know, that kind of thinking out of the box is something that we need. Patel has been a staunch Trump ally, including joining the president during his trial in Manhattan in spring and echoing that the United States security and law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, need to be overhauled. Patel published a book last year called Government Gangsters, where he railed against the deep state, the weaponization of the federal government, and the Russia investigation into Trump. Trump called the book a roadmap to exposing bad actors in the federal government and said it is a blueprint to help us take back the White House and remove these gangsters from all of government. In his book, Patel explicitly called for the revamp of the FBI in a chapter dubbed Overhauling the FBI, where he did not mince words about the state of the law enforcement agency. He wrote, quote, "Things are bad. There's no denying it. The FBI has gravely abused its power, threatening not only the rule of law, but the very foundations of self-government at the root of our democracy. But this isn't the end of the story. Change is possible at the FBI and desperately needed. The fact is, we need a federal agency that investigates federal crimes, and that agency will always be at risk of having its powers abused." He continued, advocating for the firing of corrupt actors, aggressive government oversight over the agency, and complete overhauls to special counsels, and moving the FBI out of Washington, D.C. He said, most importantly, we need to get the FBI out of Washington, D.C. There is no reason for the nation's law enforcement agency to be centralized in the swamp. Keeping the FBI in its behemoth Washington HQ building not only allows for institutional capture and incentivizes senior leadership in the FBI to lose focus on their mission and learn how to play political games instead, currying favor with politicians and cultivating relationships with the press to advance their career. My only reservation about that is I think the FBI, it's great for the FBI to be in Washington, D.C. to look after the politicians, right? I think this is a key thing that where I think maybe the Department of Justice or the FBI needs to pivot towards is to, instead of looking so much outwardly, is to start look inwardly. Right at the government, looking at representatives, senators, judges, all of these people, right, that we are supposed to put trust into, yet they have been abusing that. Now, I will give the FBI credit in the last year, they have been aggressively pursuing public corruption cases, which is a great thing. We see it here in Jackson, we see it up in New York City, which is a great thing because public corruption to me is one of the worst crimes that people can commit because it breaks down the trust in our government. It breaks down the trust in our system, which can create instability in the system, which is a big threat to our democracy. So I think, I don't know if moving the headquarters, unless you're moving them to like Quantico, where the training is in Quantico, which is where currently the FBI Academy is, I guess they can move the headquarters to Quantico, which is about 45 minutes from D.C., but I think it's a great thing to keep the FBI right there. So the FBI, so the politicians know, hey, we're watching you, right? We got our eye on you. And, that's something that needs to happen is the FBI, I think, needs to look inward more than outward, is something that, that needs to happen. Again, you know, to the FBI's credit in the last year or so, they have been focusing on that. And I hope that continues under Akash Patel. In fact, I hope it increases much more and looking at all of these senators and representatives. All right, we have to take our last break right here. When we get back, if we have time, we'll do This Day in History, but keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. We only got about 15 seconds. So on this day, December 2nd, 1823, the Monroe Doctrine was announced by President James Monroe. Which essentially said that we are not going to interfere in foreign conflicts. We're going to focus on American things and not focus on European things, which is a doctrine I say we should still look at and still continue on. All right, that's all I have for you guys today. We'll see you again tomorrow. But my name is Matthew Bishop, and you've heard the full story.
Bye.